Good Thursday. This is Ozarks at Large for January 14th, 2020 on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, the new Ready for Life initiative aims to connect skilled workers with employers more efficiently. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has that report in our second half hour. And after our show, stay with 91.3 for Here and Now from NPR. Today, we'll hear the latest news from Washington at this historic moment. And you'll meet one of the doctors from the World Health Organization who has traveled to Wuhan, China, to investigate the origins of the pandemic. Here and Now begins at 1. The Arkansas Department of Health is adding 65 deaths from COVID-19 to Arkansas's total in Wednesday's reporting. Just fewer than 4,200 Arkansans have died from the disease. The ADH also reports more than 2,400 new cases in the most recent monitoring period and an increase by 8 in the number of hospital beds in the state occupied by people battling the virus. Northwest Arkansas hospitals now have 127 COVID-19 patients. That's a slight increase over the past 24 hours. Wednesday reporting from the Oklahoma State Department of Health included 44 additional deaths from the virus, bringing that state's total deaths from COVID-19 to 2,848. Oklahoma reports a 7-day rolling average of more than 4,200 new cases per day. All four of Arkansas's members of the United States House of Representatives voted against impeaching President Donald Trump yesterday afternoon. Every Democrat in the House, as well as 10 members of the GOP, did vote for the successful impeachment of the president, the second time President Trump has been impeached. Butterball is investing nearly $9 million into a pair of Northwest Arkansas facilities. The company, one of the largest turkey product producers in the country, announced yesterday it would invest $4.7 million in its Ozark plant for an expansion estimated to create 160 jobs. A press release also indicates a $4 million investment in the Huntsville plant. The company says that that project will create 200 new jobs. The Huntsville plant produces fresh, frozen, and cooked whole turkeys, while the Ozark facility produces prepackaged frozen and fresh whole turkeys. The Fort Smith Regional Art Museum will open tomorrow after closing out of concern regarding COVID-19. A press release from the RAM indicates the annual Invitational, an exhibition the museum has hosted since 1948, opens tomorrow with the theme Exploring Mindscapes, an Artist Reflection. Another exhibit, Attention to Tension, featuring work from Fayetteville-based artist Susanna Schreckheis, remains on view until the end of the month. This is Ozarks at Large. Hospitalizations for COVID-19 throughout the state are at an all-time high. To prepare for the continued upward trend in cases, the state and its healthcare partners will be opening two alternative care sites in Little Rock and Van Buren. As Ozarks at Large's Susanna Sitek tells us, the goal of building these facilities is to relieve pressure at hospitals.
Geralyn Jones, who is the medical director for healthcare preparedness and emergency response at the Arkansas Department of Health, describes the current status of the state's healthcare system as strained for multiple reasons.
COVID-19 being a major one of them. And we're also, you also have to realize that we're also in respiratory season as well, just in general, the winter months, in terms of people needing to be hospitalized for respiratory illnesses, folks with underlying conditions, heart disease, lung disease, and things like that. Viruses that are prevalent on a regular basis tend to affect those people more.
So the healthcare system experiences increased hospitalizations around this time in a normal year, but now it's been coupled with increasing cases of COVID-19 across the state. Jones says available beds are tight across the board and especially in ICUs.
Oftentimes people are waiting in emergency departments for extended period of time. And as an emergency room physician, I'm saying that it's longer than we would like, longer than anticipated times, and that's just because it's hard to find folks' beds.
The health department developed a plan for alternative care sites during the COVID-19 surge in the spring, which called for much larger facilities with capacity for anywhere from 500 to 700 patients. Jones says the sites that are being constructed in Crawford and Pulaski counties are much smaller. The facilities will be able to house up to 124 patients if hospitals around the state run out of room. The site at J.A. Gilbreth Conference Center on the Baptist Health Medical Center campus in Little Rock will be able to accommodate up to 50 low acuity COVID-19 patients, while the Baptist Health site in Van Buren will have 74 hospital beds, of which 8 will be used for critical care.
They're designed to take care of low acuity COVID-19 patients, those patients that would have potentially been in the hospital before and have declared themselves as not needing a ton of intervention, but perhaps not being ready to go home. So perhaps they still need some supplemental oxygen or that kind of thing. They would be able to be taken care of at these facilities. Kind of decompressing our structured hospitals and leaving space for folks that might be a bit more acute.
The alternative care site in Little Rock is expected to start accepting patients on January 18th. Meanwhile, the site in Van Buren will have a staggered opening with 44 patient rooms ready on January 18th and the remaining 30 beds ready on February 1st. The two additional spaces will cost the state about $7.4 million, but the governor hopes FEMA will fund 80% of the project. Jones says they decided to go ahead with the construction after analyzing trends in COVID-19 cases over the last few weeks.
We know that increased cases are going to ultimately lead to increased hospitalizations, and which will subsequently lead to increased deaths. And so things like hospitalizations and deaths are lagging indicators, but we do know daily that our case load is going up. So the trend is going in the wrong direction. And so these spaces are built in anticipation of that trend.
Jones Department and Baptist Health are examining different staffing models to figure out the best way to use existing healthcare workers to cover the additional capacity. For months now, hospital administrators have been saying that medical staff is in short supply. Jones says they're looking into whether people with nursing degrees who are in administration would be interested in helping staff the alternative care sites.
There's just not enough people for the needs that are presented. And some of that can be mediated by expediting nursing licenses, certainly for already credentialed and experienced providers, that's great, but there's also a dearth of those individuals. And so expediting licenses for new grads, but when it comes to taking care of sick people, you need more experience, but potentially these folks could be helpful in some of our lower acuity centers. So we're actively looking at that right now.
Jones says they're also looking into whether medical professionals who have retired may be interested in returning to work at the alternative care sites. And as the state wraps up that construction, another project undertaken by Arkansas hospitals is already up and running.
COVIDCOM is working very well. Obviously, we're limited by places that we can move patients, and that gets to the bed capacity issue. It's kind of a revolving circle, but there have been over 300 cases initiated for about 210 patients, and COVIDCOM has been able to facilitate the complete movement and the complete transfer of 50% of those.
COVIDCOM is modeled after the state's TraumaCOM system, which makes the movement of trauma patients easier and faster. The system matches the needs of given patients with the hospitals that can meet them and then facilitates the transfer process. Jones says right now the COVIDCOM system has mostly been used to transfer patients because the facility that admits them doesn't have a bed.
It's possible that COVIDCOM may in the future be utilized to help decompress some of the hospitals and moving patients out from the larger facilities or the inpatient facilities into these lower acuity areas, these alternative care facilities.
Jones says patients who live in more rural parts of the state are getting transferred to facilities far from their families because the healthcare providers in those regions have fewer resources.
COVIDCOM is looking at the closest facilities first, but if your loved one needs to be admitted and you and they can't be cared for in the specific hospital and then subsequent region to which they present, then we're going to try to find a bed, because ultimately we need to get you admitted or your loved one admitted if they need to be in the hospital. And so some people are having to be transferred quite a distance from where they live.
Jones hopes the alternative care sites don't have to be used. But she adds that there's a reason the state has decided to go ahead with their construction.
What we've seen is that it hasn't been kind of a trickle. Like, when you run out of space, you kind of really run out of space. And things have been, flexed and squeezed and all of that kind of stuff to the point so that if you're to the point where you have to use a facility like this, it's likely not for one patient, but for lots of patients.
And although Arkansans have heard it repeated dozens of times, Jones says she still wants to remind people the best way to reduce hospitalizations is to not get infected in the first place by washing hands, wearing masks, and continuing social distancing. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
The annual Martin Luther King Jr. Vigil at the University of Arkansas is scheduled for Monday and will be held virtually at asg.uark.edu. More information about that event and others in Northwest Arkansas connected with the holiday can be found at nwamlk.org. And on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large, Antoinette Grajeda reports unity is the theme for this year's Martin Luther King Jr. holiday events in the region. This is Ozarks at Large.
When caring for a seriously ill loved one, the journey shouldn't be taken alone. Circle of Life Hospice can help. Services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance. No one is turned away based on an inability to pay. 750-6632 or nwacircleoflife.com for more. The Kiva NWA Hub is a local, community-based lending program and a branch of Kiva US. This program expands access to microloans, which help entrepreneurs in Northwest Arkansas develop and thrive. These non-conventional loans are for disadvantaged area business owners and sole proprietors. Applicants and lenders interested in supporting area business borrowers can learn more at kiva-nwa.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. With more people stuck working from home and children stuck learning from home, after-school programs for children can relieve a lot of pandemic stress for everyone. But as Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth reports, these programs are struggling to meet demands while also finding ways to keep children safe.
It's no doubt that student learning has been stunted by the pandemic. But for so many kids, the school day is just one part of their education. A study from the After School Alliance, a research nonprofit, says demand for after-school programs went up across the country in 2020, even as many organizations shut down or cut services to help stop the spread of COVID-19. And Matt Tolliver with the Boys and Girls Club of Benton County says adjusting to the new restrictions has come with a steep learning curve.
Pretty much everything that we do at the club, we had to almost throw away. Every piece of our operation or what we do, we had to rethink because of COVID. Everything from drop-off procedures, pick-up procedures with the parents to the groups inside of the club, how many kids we have per group, our staffing ratio, cleaning procedures, all of that had to be redone.
The Boys and Girls Club of Benton County shut down in March and reopened at 50% capacity in June. While Tolliver says the overall number of kids his organization serves is down, parents who can't work from home are relying more on the after-school programs to help them out.
There are a lot of families that we serve where both parents are still working. And so those are the folks. We've seen an uptick in the number of either single or dual-income families where they need our services.
Tammy Shaver, the executive director of Big Brothers Big Sisters Northwest Arkansas, says last spring all of their programs went virtual.
Our school programs went on pause. Some of them are currently still paused. Our enrollment and training, interviews, all of that switched to Zoom. We started planning online group activities for our community matches. We've encouraged matches to get creative by gardening together or doing driveway activities when the weather was nice, dropping off crafts or baking supplies, and then working on those projects together virtually. More recently, we've started allowing more in-person activities with some strict safety measures in place because the kids were really struggling and craving that face-to-face connection.
And that's been one of the biggest challenges, she says. As the lines between classroom and home are blurred, a lot of kids are starting to experience Zoom fatigue.
It's really hard right now because we know that matches want to get together. And so we're trying to figure out how to do that safely. So we have a lot of mask mandates. A lot of, if you are in the car together, you have the windows rolled down. I don't care if it's 4 degrees outside. We want to make sure that our kids are safe, especially as things continue the way they are with COVID. I think it was September when we started back up cautiously, although we are allowing people to remain completely virtual if that is what they feel safe doing.
And she says with kids and their parents' routines interrupted in 2020, the need for mentoring services has been on the rise.
So we had to close some matches due to parents or volunteers losing their jobs or college students moving away. Sometimes internet access for kids was a barrier. But overall, we tried to be flexible to keep supporting the matches that we had currently enrolled. And then we have actually still had kids coming through the program. We had to pause on little boys for a while because we had so many little boys waiting. But thankfully, our volunteers are awesome, and we've been able to get most of those waiting littles matched. And then we have more big sisters than we have little sisters. So we're actually open, really open for enrollment for little sisters. We can get them matched up really quickly when they come through the door.
And if trying to keep kids safe and engaged wasn't hard enough, these programs are experiencing another hurdle. Like a lot of nonprofits, they rely heavily on volunteers. Matt Tolliver with the Boys and Girls Club says they stopped using volunteers for safety reasons. And Shaver says Big Brothers Big Sisters lost a lot of volunteers when colleges closed down in March. And she says some new volunteers are still nervous about safety.
So they're kind of sitting out there in limbo, waiting to be matched until they can meet. We still need more mentors because we're going to have, 150 new kids coming through the door this year. So we need more mentors to get them matched.
One of those new mentors is Ashwin Garg. He moved to Northwest Arkansas for work in July and started volunteering in the summer. And he says the pandemic restrictions can be tough. His little brother Caleb can get frustrated with wearing a mask, but it's a chance to set a good example for his little.
It's important that, I stay true not just to the protocol and the rules we've set out for ourselves through the program, but also to setting the right parameters and guidelines for him. So even if we're indoors with just the two of us, we both keep our masks on at all times because it's really hard to contact trace or manage a bubble with him going to school, me going to work, et cetera. And so, it's just about bringing him along the journey and explaining to them that it's been weird for everybody, and it's just important that we do our best to stay safe.
So with a vaccine on the horizon, the future for many of these after-school programs should be getting a little bit brighter, but Matt Tolliver thinks things won't go back to normal anytime soon.
But we're anticipating the impact, overall impact continuing to all the way through the end of this year. It's not going to be back. It's not like you're going to flip a switch back in the fall and we're going to be back at 100% again. It's going to take a while.
And Tammy Shaver says 2021 will see an even greater need for after-school programs.
The top things that people come to Big Brothers Big Sisters for in terms of helping kids is a lot of kids have anxiety, a lot of kids have depression, and a pandemic and social distancing is exacerbating that. And so we're going to see even more of that moving forward. And kids need somebody to talk to about it. They need somebody to just listen. Or maybe they don't want to talk about it. Maybe they just want to do something fun, but they need to get out of their own heads and out and connected with somebody.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
The nationally ranked Arkansas Razorback women's basketball team is hosting Florida tonight at Bud Walton Arena. Arkansas 1-3 in the SEC so far, 10-4 overall after this weekend's 1-point loss to number 8 Texas A&M. The Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team, now 10-3, after a 16-point loss last night at LSU. Arkansas will play at number 24, Alabama, Saturday afternoon. Several other University of Arkansas teams are scheduled to be in action this weekend. The swimming and diving squad's first meet of 2021 is set for tomorrow afternoon in Fayetteville. The gymnastic team's first home meet of the year, scheduled for tomorrow night at 7:30 against LSU in Barnhill Arena on the UA campus. The men's tennis team opens the season tomorrow at home against Nebraska-Omaha, this after having last year's spring season canceled because of COVID-19. And the indoor track and field season is scheduled to begin in Fayetteville this weekend with the Arkansas Invitational. Coronavirus continues to alter team schedules. The University of Arkansas-Fort Smith women's basketball games against Texas A&M Commerce this weekend will not take place as scheduled because of COVID-19 protocols. The next game now scheduled for Tuesday at Texas A&M Commerce. The UAFS women are not scheduled to play at home now until Saturday the 23rd. The UAFS men's team still scheduled to play this weekend, but the days have changed. The game versus A&M Commerce in Fort Smith now scheduled for tomorrow at 5:30, with only members of the players' families allowed to be in attendance. The two teams scheduled to meet again in Commerce, Texas, Sunday afternoon. The men's basketball team at John Brown University waited until the new year to start the season after the virus required cancellations and postponements. The men's team lost its season opener Tuesday night 91-79 to Science and Arts. The JBU men are scheduled to host Texas Wesleyan tonight in Siloam Springs. Only a limited number of family members will be admitted inside to tonight's contest. The JBU women will have to wait a bit longer to start their season. Their game tonight postponed.
Welcome to today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Plenty of headlines to get to this week, including a Hilton hotel under consideration in downtown Bentonville. According to planning documents, the city is considering South Carolina hotel developers want to build a 17,000-square-foot micro-hotel on South Main Street, and the brand is called Motto by Hilton. That's Hilton's 15th and latest hotel brand, introduced in late 2018. Motto by Hilton opened its first U.S. location in Washington, D.C. late last year, and there are other deals in various stages of development throughout the world, and that includes Bentonville. The development underwent technical review by city planners earlier this week, and the project will go before the city's planning commission at a later date for further consideration. For more on that project, you can read our story at nwabusinessjournal.com. There's more news after the break on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
After seeing record-breaking numbers in 2019, passenger traffic at the Northwest Arkansas National Airport was cut sharply by the COVID-19 pandemic, with many would-be vacationers and business travelers staying home. Between January and November last year, the number of passengers flying out of the airport declined 60%. The December numbers are not yet available. Earlier this week, I spoke with Andrew Branch, the airport's chief business development officer, about what the trends look like heading into 2021 and what it will take to help restore confidence in airline travel.
Now, it's disappointing when 2019 was a record year and January and February of 2020
right.
Had all the makings of heading towards another record year. So COVID definitely definitely took the wind out of our sails.
So as you talk about that climb, you do hope to see a return to travel in greater numbers in 2021. I mean, we all do. So what are the airport priorities as it relates to that? How do you restore confidence in travel again to keep those numbers moving in that right direction?
Well, so, you know, there's certain things that are within your control and other things, you know, they're not. Obviously, the things we can do, we are doing, and just trying to communicate those things are, you know, keeping the airport clean, promoting spaces where people can stay properly socially distanced, requiring people to wear masks in the terminal and all those things. The airlines are doing some great things with their planes, with the cleaning of the planes, and then also providing extra space when they can. So we're just trying to be part of that, communicate what we're doing as much as we can. And some of it, though, really will come when there's more confidence. Obviously, probably the slowest to return we're expecting and seeing is business travel. But there is a lot of pent-up demand for leisure travel. People are wanting to get out and go places.
Yeah, I know that.
Some of that traffic.
That business travel is such a big part of the airport here. What about testing? Testing airline passengers is becoming somewhat more common at airports as a way to boost that confidence. You know, on-site testing centers, pre-flight testing, is that taking place at XNA? Are those discussions being had?
They're not. It's really one of those things where something like that has to be almost led from the health department side of things.
Right.
The airlines, I think, may eventually get into some rapid testing. I think we might be a little too small and may not have enough traffic
right.
to justify a full operation. I think probably the bigger piece, when we're going to really see it return to somewhat normal, will be as people are getting vaccinated.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard that from, you know, bankers and other industry leaders, that really the vaccination is a big part of what you call the, quote, getting back to normal and getting that program up and running and growing throughout the country. So, you know, when the crowds do return, at least to what you were used to pre-COVID, you want to be ready. And a big part of that is a project to build a sky bridge and renovate the terminal entrance, which is one of your big priorities right now. Give us an update on that project, where it's headed this year. I think you're still in the design phase, if I'm not mistaken, but is that something you will start on this year?
The design, I think the design phase is almost completed. I haven't received a recent update on that. I would expect, I believe we're putting out for bid this year. So it's possible mm-hmm. that construction could start later in the year. Some of that, our board has very wisely slowed down some of the projects that they were looking at. And there's always exit ramps where you can, you know, pause. I think that one is probably the most likely to begin this year. And a big piece of that, obviously, it's important to try to safely get people from the parking garage and the parking lot through to the TSA checkpoint. But as much as that is, this interior portion of the interior bridge will provide redundancy for the escalators and elevators.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we have one elevator and one set of escalators. And if they go down, then people are climbing stairs. And obviously some of our customers are just not able to do that. So that's really probably the biggest driver on this is, and then also anytime you do construction like that, it's going to be a disruption to passengers. And while traffic is a little slower, we are able to, you know, just it'll disrupt less.
Right.
So I would think that'll happen pretty soon.
Yeah. Anything else on the horizon? I know during typical years pre-COVID, we would get announcements of new cities and new direct flights that would be available. Is that a possibility in 2021, still adding more direct flights, or are we still, you know, on a pause right now for that type of growth?
You know, it's hard to say. We try to stay positive. We're hoping, you know, a lot of the routes we had pre-COVID have been paused, and we hope those mm-hmm. will come back. There's always the possibility of new cities, new routes. As airlines are figuring out how they're going to do business, there could be mm-hmm. lots of changes. We could see displacement of some routes and replaced with new cities we haven't flown to before. But we're playing defense as much as offense right now. We're just trying to make sure we can keep the planes that are going out as full as possible. And really, it's going to come down to, you know, when people feel comfortable, how traffic returns. I mean, if there aren't enough people flying to support new routes, I would not think those will happen. If if we see a big surge of people getting vaccinated and really wanting to get out there and travel, which is the hope, there's no telling. We could have some great success with new routes this year.
That's Andrew Branch, who is the Chief Business Development Officer at Northwest Arkansas National Airport. Always good to catch up with him to discuss the goings-on of the state's second largest airport. As we mentioned at the top of the show, it's been a busy week. We had the General Assembly convening in Little Rock on Monday, and the governor gave his last State of the State address on Tuesday. We will, of course, have daily reporting on the legislative session on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. Also in the news this week, Walmart has partnered with investment firm Ribbit Capital to create a new fintech startup. Walmart will be the majority owner of the startup, which will focus on offering modern, innovative, and affordable financial solutions. And Tyson Foods has agreed to settle a portion of a class action lawsuit alleging some of the nation's major poultry companies conspired to fix broiler prices and rig bids. Tyson did not disclose the amount of the settlement in a court filing, and a company spokesman said the settlement is not an admission of liability. And today's bank has a new president and CEO. David Scruggs has been promoted to succeed Larry Olson, who has retired after a 45-year banking career, the last 10 with Today's Bank, which, by the way, is the only bank in Arkansas that is chartered in Huntsville. You can find those stories and more online at nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatling, and that is today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. We're available as a podcast as well. You can subscribe for free to our daily show at any major podcast distributor. Find out more at KUAF.com. Governor Asa Hutchinson yesterday announced the creation of a unified system of educational opportunities, workforce development, and data analysis. The goal of the new project is to improve workforce development in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Ready for Life is a statewide initiative with collaborative partners in education, workforce, business, industry, and government. Under the CARES Act, governors were given discretionary funds designed to improve educational opportunities. Hutchinson announced he is committing $14.7 million of those discretionary funds to supporting this project. The first part of this initiative is an integrated education and workforce data analytics website.
And if you go there today, you'll see the beginning of a robust website that will be a tool for the future. It'll be unique. It will be searchable. It will be used by employers. It will be used by workers to make sure we connect the workforce and their skills with the right employers.
Hutchinson said the new initiative will help achieve his long-term goal of connecting work skills and work certifications with employers more efficiently. The project provides more than $4.5 million to two-year institutions to expand workforce training opportunities in high-wage, high-demand careers for all Arkansans. There are three key parts to the initiative.
First is the learning management system. Secondly, is a tracking system for career development among our workforce. And then the learner employer records, which are the credentials of our workforce that we can market to prospective employers, that we can utilize to attract industry here, but also to match that credentialed employee and their training with the employer and the industry that needs that skill.
The governor said all Arkansans can use this system.
Whether the employer side, the worker side, it can also be utilized as a tool to recruit industry to our state, showing that we have these credentials, this capability in workforce.
Secretary of Commerce Mike Preston said improving Arkansas's workforce narrative will be a boon for the state.
As I've said this many times before, the state that can become the leader in workforce development is going to be the leader in economic development for the next 10, 15 years to come. We are building that platform for us to be that leader in economic development via workforce development. We don't have to go into a prospect meeting in the future and talk about everything else, and then say, trust us on workforce. We can actually go in there now and sell on workforce development because we have that pipeline. We now have that data that's going to be available to us.
In addition to recruiting businesses to the state, this tool may also prove beneficial to Arkansans who have lost their job during the pandemic.
From this perspective of Department of Workforce Services, where we've seen such a spike in the pandemic because of unemployment insurance and people who are out of a job, we now have an opportunity for them to better upskill and get on a career path where we can help fill some of these jobs, because we still have jobs available out there. We just have to be able to pull these pieces together and finish that puzzle, and this is that tool and that opportunity to do so.
The new workforce development tool can be accessed at readyforlife.arkansas.gov. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Lighthouse NWA assists seniors to securely downsize to safer accommodations. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke to the owner of Lighthouse, as well as to a couple who moved from their spacious private home in Bella Vista into an independent living community.
My name is Allison Van Hecke, and I'm a social worker, a realtor, and a downsizing specialist.
Allison Van Hecke owns Lighthouse Group, NWA, a move management and senior real estate company. She and her 12-member team, all independent contractors, including a nurse and a social worker, assist senior clients to sort through and eliminate personal family possessions, sell their original homes, and securely move into smaller accommodations. Van Hecke, a licensed master social worker for 25 years, ran several assisted living facilities before founding Lighthouse 3 years ago.
And it was really born out of a need that I saw as a hospital caseworker, working with seniors when they could no longer stay at home. There really was no one helping them with the transition process from being at home to whether it be a smaller home or a senior living community. And so that was how the company was born. I started out as just a realtor with a passion to help seniors do this process, and quickly realized it wasn't necessarily the house that was causing people to be stuck. It was really the stuff inside their house that was causing them to be stuck. And so then I formed a move management company to where we can work with the entire downsizing process.
Van Hecke says American families devote a lifetime to accumulating things, real property, household goods, furnishings, tools, not to mention precious family artifacts. And according to the online realtor Zillow, nearly a million American households will have gone on the market by 2027, downsizing. But Van Hecke says it's different for everyone.
Downsizing is really a lifelong process. You spend the first half of your life building things up and the second half getting rid of things. And so downsizing is definitely a process. It is not something that is a one and done.
For example, one client had accumulated 16 sets of family dinnerware safely stowed in her basement
that she didn't know what to do with, and she didn't want to lose them. She didn't want to lose the memories attached to them, even though she hadn't touched them for years. And so we went ahead, and I have some amazingly creative women who work with me, and we took one plate from each set, and we made a beautiful collage on her wall in her living room. They each meant something to her. And she cried when she saw it because she realized she hadn't even looked at those dishes for so long. She was just holding on to them, and they were holding her back.
Lighthouse works by the job, quoting costs to clients, which include hiring third-party movers.
They move you into your new space, and then we do what we call resettle. So we resettle you into your new home. We unpack your boxes. We decorate your space with you involved so it looks very comfortable to you. So the minute you come in, it feels like home. It's very emotional for people to walk in and see what we've done. We try to make it mimic where they left as much as possible, especially when there's memory issues involved, any cognitive deficiencies that make it just harder to move. So, and then when we're all settled in the new space, we go back to the old space and we work on estate liquidation. So everything that's left behind that you no longer want, we can go ahead, we liquidate through either an auction or through an estate sale. And then when that process is done, we get the house cleaned and ready for sale. And then it's handed off to our real estate team And then the real estate team steps in and sells it.
The Lighthouse team helped Marianne Zotti and her husband, Hal Shope, downsize from their Bella Vista home in late 2019. She's a retired federal and state public health professional. He's retired from marketing and commercial broadcasting. Together, they've raised 8 children, a blended family.
After we retired up here, Hal's vision started to become more of a problem. Until now, a few years ago, he became legally blind.
The couple had their sights set on a townhome in Concordia, an independent living community in Bella Vista. That's where they first learned about Lighthouse NWA, so hired the team to help them downsize, which started with a walkthrough of their family home.
And they just handled everything.
With guidance from the couple, the team packed household items for the move, setting aside the rest for auction, staging the home for resale. Years of personal documents were also sorted and shredded, Zotti says.
But the other thing that they did was they made sure that all of our electronic gadgets worked, and they went over everything with me, you know, the new Wi-Fi, everything. They would prompt me about when I needed to set things up. And then they helped me to make sure like my printers worked and the television and all that stuff.
Zotti says Lighthouse team members helped unpack and move into their new place, assisting with details like hanging photos and artworks in the town home, even arranging bookshelves. The process took around 6 weeks, she says, and now the couple is resettled.
I feel much better because I know that there are a lot of things that our kids didn't want to have to mess with after we're gone. And we still have more downsizing to do. Because we went to a townhouse, we were able to keep more things than normally we might have. But it really helped kind of give me the process for thinking about if we have to do something again, what other things we might downsize and get rid of. But the truth is, we don't miss anything that we didn't bring. So I'm not even sure that we know what we didn't bring, but we have everything that we need.
Hal Shope recalls how Dan McElroy, a former Lighthouse team member, helped him sort out his lifelong tool collection.
I didn't have to worry about packing it or putting it this or getting it out or dragging it somewhere. He did everything. And it was a traumatic thing for me. These are some of the things I had before I ever met Marianne. And it's like, wow, I've got to let these. And he was very understanding. We walked through, he laid everything out, what we were going to auction, what we were going to give away, what we were going to keep and take with us. And it was about a painless an experience, because I was dreading it. These are my friends I'm getting rid of.
He's kept his favorite screwdriver and other key tools. Hal Shope says Lighthouse was especially considerate, accommodating his visual impairment, greatly alleviating his anxiety. And Marianne Zotti says they handled everything with extreme care. The couple, who received proceeds from the auction and house sales, says the cost of Lighthouse downsizing services are reasonable.
I was just amazed that the cost, and I think they work with you on what you can afford. I mean, they're a very understanding company. Allison is just wonderful because that's kind of her background, is taking care of people.
Lighthouse founder Allison Van Hecke says naming her realty company was intentional.
My initial thought was that I'm guiding people through storms, was kind of how that came about, was that Lighthouse was really the whole idea of downsizing can be such an overwhelming process that I thought, you know, we can be that guide, that light that kind of helps people get to that, to the end, to safety. And a lot of times it is safety.
Because downsizing requires navigating an emotional divesting of dear family possessions and memorabilia. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Tomorrow on Science Friday on 91.3 KUAF, the COVID-19 vaccines come from successful work with other vaccines. The vaccines didn't come out of nowhere, but through hard work and perseverance. And why some states are better at delivering the vaccine than others, and what COVID-19 has taught us about vaccines of the future. Science Friday, tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3 KUAF.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with sound perimeter. More than any other time, these days we need strength, clear minds, hope, and music to hold on to. Sound perimeter started today with French composer Maurice Ravel and his Pavane for a Dead Princess, interpreted by the French National Orchestra under the direction of Dalia Stasevska. Maurice Ravel described his piece as, quote, an evocation of a dance that a little princess might, in former times, have danced at the Spanish court. Today, we, too, go back to our memories of better times to comfort our souls. That was an excerpt from Maurice Ravel's Pavane for a Dead Princess, interpreted by the French National Orchestra under the direction of Dalia Stasevska. Alfred Schnittke wrote collected songs where every verse is filled with grief as the second movement for his Concerto for Mixed Choir. The famed Kronos Quartet arranged this movement for a string quartet, and today we present you with their beautiful rendition. The depth of this piece is beyond words, transforming sorrow into solace and beauty. Thank you. That was the Kronos Quartet interpreting an excerpt from Alfred Schnittke's collected songs where every verse is filled with grief. Holding to memories, transforming, or finding strength from within, I wish all of our listeners a healthy and peaceful 2021. We end Sound Perimeter today with Dominican Republic jazz pianist Michel Camilo, accompanied by bassist Anthony Jackson and percussionist Horacio Hernandez, performing From Within. This track was featured in Calle 54, Street 54, a 2000 documentary film about Latin jazz directed by Spanish director Fernando Trueba. This is Leah Uribe, associate professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
Ashton Barbary and Sarah Lothan are scheduled to perform together tomorrow evening at Moonbrock Brewery in Rogers. The two singer-songwriters are scheduled to begin playing at 8. They promise both originals and covers. And Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art will host a virtual printmaking session tomorrow evening, beginning at 6:30. It's part of the museum's Art by the Glass program. This class, intended for adults, will guide participants through a printmaking session using everyday materials. What you put in your glass is completely up to you at home. The session is free, but it does require registration. To find out more and to see a list of materials suggested for the class, you can go to crystalbridges.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Arcega's drive-through location at 1509 MLK in Fayetteville. Open 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a full coffee menu, espresso options, seasonal drinks, and a small foods menu. Arcegas.com or Facebook for more.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzanna Sitek, Jacqueline Froelich, Daniel Carruth and Leah Uribe, our show produced by Timothy Dennis, today's Sound Perimeter produced by Lee Wood. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling, produced by Stephanie Brock. It's part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. Our theme, written and produced by Daryl Sean. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you so much for listening. Much appreciation to Antoinette Grajeda for hosting the show the past few days while I napped and became symptom-free. Please wear your mask. Stay socially distant. Get rest when you can. We have a new show for you tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m.